fiscal and the monetary policies that various governments undertook after the pandemic sort of broke out was a final nail in the coffin. Sometime in 2020 was really the aha moment of thinking that yes, Bitcoin is the next big thing. It is the least uncertain asset class in the world. It is essentially a check on government policy, on central bank policy. I think the whole idea of, you know, Bitcoin kind of subsume AI innovation as well, because what Bitcoin is if there is to exist an economy outside of AI, Bitcoin touches that as well. So Bitcoin is not just touching technological innovation; it touches all of human, you know, human society. It touches every nook and corner of the global economy, and to that extent, Bitcoin is going to be certainly a massively important parallel force as the rise of AI happens over the next sort of several years and several decades.
Introducing the Blockware Marketplace. Start mining Bitcoin today. This has the potential to transform the mining industry, as now anyone can buy a Bitcoin ASIC using on-chain or Lightning, see its historical and live hash rate before purchasing, and be earning Bitcoin mining rewards in minutes. This brings transparency and turnkey mining to a whole other level. Start mining Bitcoin today at marketplace.blockwaresolutions.com. Hey everybody, welcome back to the Blockware Intelligence Podcast. This week I have on Smeet Bhatt from Theia. Smeet, welcome.
Hey Joe, thanks for having me here.
Yeah, absolutely. Glad to have you. Looking forward to this conversation. I think this is going to be really interesting for people. And I want to really kind of jump right into something that's captivating that you've tweeted. Basically this idea that, you know, Silicon Valley types, seed investors, VCs, that, you know, are kind of speculating in a bunch of different companies, hoping that, you know, one of them becomes a unicorn and has a successful exit. You basically said that they will get smoked or, you know, have a tough 2020, you know, financial performance if they don't have Bitcoin exposure. Why is that?
Right. So I think the general idea behind using the word like smoked is essentially any kind of asset priced in Bitcoin terms is essentially going to zero. If you chart out any kind of like financial macro asset, be it, you know, commodities, equities, you know, bonds of different geographies, you know, different sort of asset classes, everything priced in Bitcoin terms is sort of going down to zero effectively, right? Now, obviously, I know I have personal background in venture capital. I am generally like very bullish growth, bullish the asset class. The idea here is that, you know, what the kind of returns that we saw in 2010s in venture capital asset class was obviously one due to growth in terms of productivity, in terms of like internet, penetration of the cloud, penetration of the mobile ecosystem. Having said that, towards the end of 2010s, you know, especially around COVID, the majority of the alpha and venture capital was essentially one way or another being driven by, you know, central banks easing monetary policy and essentially keeping rates zero. So pushing out large institutional investors, you know, large LPs, pension funds, endowments to take on more risk through venture capital. And that kind of like turned out okay till it stopped turning out to be okay. So we saw around 2021, 2022, there was a huge sort of, you know, fall in terms of the number of deals, the kind of, you know, valuation activity, the kind of like volume we see in venture capital. And I feel that that kind of trend is going to like sort of continue over the next several years as this sort of broader, you know, macro bust that we could, you know, go through. And to that extent, you know, my fundamental thesis is that any kind of investor who has a fiduciary duty to their, you know, LPs, to their institutional investors, need to have some kind of Bitcoin exposure. Obviously, it depends if you're an individual versus investment fund versus a corporate versus a large financial institution. You might have different requirements and different ways of like ensuring your long-term returns. But the idea here is that even seed investors and VCs who typically take early stage bets in hope of generating a lot of alpha will need to have some kind of Bitcoin exposure directly by holding on to the asset class, or at least have some form of exposure into like equity exposure into Bitcoin companies. And that was really the genesis behind the idea of like, you know, folks like Jason and other VCs in the ecosystem. I think we will see continued investment activity happening in Bitcoin as a lot of this, you know, late stage drama kind of like fizzles out as we see more and more crypto projects being turned away to the sidelines. Bitcoin is certainly going to emerge along with AI as one of the most fundamentally important themes within venture capital and technology ecosystem over the next 5, 7, 10 years.
100%. Yeah, I liked what you brought up about how pretty much all other major asset classes denominated in Bitcoin have a pretty clear trend. Obviously, it helps that we're, you know, in the early stages of Bitcoin adoption, I would say. But even going beyond that, I mean, I like to think of the idea that, you know, whether it's equities, real estate, whatnot, if there's demand for those assets, there's going to be new supply that's created, right? There's going to be venture capitalists funding tech startups that are going to compete for, you know, Google and Apple's future cash flows. There's going to be builders out there building new apartment buildings and building new single family homes. It's like we can create more of every other financial asset, but we can't really create more Bitcoin. And I think that's like really what makes it super unique and super exciting. So
absolutely. Just to add on to that, I feel the doom case around AI essentially replacing a lot of technology jobs and, you know, programmers and coders essentially means that a lot of like smart folks and coders will end up like coming into the domain of starting up themselves. Which means that the supply of startups, supply of assets, is only on the rise. Where, in an environment where, you know, there is not enough liquidity, there might be a capital crunch, a capital sort of, you know, a dearth of capital, and I feel venture capital as an asset class itself will go through some fundamental shifts over the next several years as we continue to see like, you know, rising productivity because of AI. And at the same time, sort of, you know, this whole idea of Bitcoin being emerging as a new form of money that is powered by technology and decentralization. And when I use these words, I truly mean these words. Unlike a lot of our friends from the crypto ecosystem, who you know very loosely have used this term and kind of tarnished the reputation.
Yeah, I want to dive deeper into your thoughts on AI. I'm actually curious to hear what you think there. But first, I want to hear more about, I guess, you and your professional background. Like, what did you do before Theia? And, you know, how did maybe that lead you into Bitcoin?
Absolutely. So, you know, funnily enough, started my career, professional career as a trader in FX and interest rates market on Wall Street, you know, worked at a famed, you know, legacy institution called Deutsche Bank. I was part of their, you know, fixed income and FX derivatives team. So my first exposure to global macro as an asset class happened on a trading desk. Most of my, you know, sort of mathematical and statistical ideas around risk and risk modeling came through my exposure to you know, pricing these derivative assets on FX and rates. So it was, you know, a phenomenal start to my career. Having said that, you know, having a full-time job on Wall Street was not certainly the most exciting career prospect sometime in the mid-2010s. You know, my sort of academic background happens to be in engineering and physics. So technology and engineering was always kind of my backbone. And sometime around mid-2010s, as we sort of spoke about, you know, rise of venture capital, rise of like technology startups, I kind of was fortunate enough to like ride that wave first as a founder, then as a VC investor myself, and then after that, finally as a founding member of an enterprise software company before founding Theia. So Theia is, you know, technically my second time starting up as an entrepreneur. Before this, as I said, I have worked in, you know, marketing, business development, sales, in enterprise software and the fintech domain. I've also been a venture capital investor, again, sort of broadly looked at the consumer fintech and the enterprise software space before finally landing onto Theia in 2023. So it's been a long journey. I still sort of very fondly remember my time as a derivatives trader. I think had I not spent those couple of years at Deutsche Bank, my fundamental understanding of Bitcoin would have been like very different. At some level, you know, having worked on Wall Street and then sort of transitioning into the technology world and sort of more Silicon Valley kind of ecosystem gives me a very, very good sort of balanced perspective on both the technological aspects of Bitcoin and the monetary aspects of Bitcoin. Bitcoin has been a personal rabbit hole last several years, and it finally reached a point where I wanted to sort of, you know, dedicate my full-time capacity to, you know, building in the asset class.
Yeah, that's awesome. I guess where in those past several years did you originally discover Bitcoin? And like, when you had maybe your first or second touch point with Bitcoin, was it an immediate like aha, or was it like, I feel like for most people, it's a slow process where you have to hear about it a couple of times, you have to dig a little bit deeper and see, you know, what's really here. Where in your process did you really understand Bitcoin?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I think I would sort of put my journey into Bitcoin into three phases. The first one is essentially back in 2014. As I said, you know, hanging around with other, you know, FX derivatives traders, Bitcoin kind of like came up as a point of, you know, a topic on the trading floor. Kind of quickly dismissed it. Sort of very traditional, sort of very standard kind of like Wall Street instinct of like dismissing something as you know, interesting enough, but not really worth attention. So kind of dismissing back in 2014, 2017, obviously bull cycle. Saw a lot of friends and colleagues from the tech ecosystem get excited about Bitcoin. So kind of like had my first initial, you know, interest in Bitcoin in 2017. I would say 2018 and 2019 are the 2 years where I had most of my, you know, building up the base, the epistemological base for understanding Bitcoin long term, and finally, I would say COVID, you know, the fiscal and the monetary policies that various, you know, governments undertook after the pandemic sort of broke out was a final nail in the coffin. I think sometime in 2020 was really the aha moment, thinking that yes, Bitcoin is the next big thing. It is the least uncertain asset class in the world. It is essentially a check on, you know, government policy, on central bank policy, and you know, these kind of monetary resets have happened multiple times in the past. I'm a student of history, and you know, we finally hit a moment after the pandemic where there was no like looking back. So I think we're definitely past the event horizon of the Bitcoin black hole.
100%. I do want to dive into your thoughts on AI and also how it relates to Bitcoin, since you do have, you know, VC and tech experience. What are your thoughts on AI and how is it going to maybe change the world, and how might that affect Bitcoin?
So I feel, you know, AI is certainly one of those sort of interesting paradigm shifts in the technology industry, which will certainly go down as parallels to the rise of internet and then the rise of mobile, if not bigger. By all estimates, you know, we believe that AI is going to be like far bigger technological jump than anything that we have seen in the last several decades, several centuries. And I'm kind of sympathetic to that view. I think it's a little too early. My sense is that, you know, the first 3 months of excitement of like ChatGPT and ChatGPT like AI was tremendous, and it kind of like opened up a whole new set of ideas through which we can like disrupt existing business processes. We can sort of, you know, augment human creativity, and I think there's a lot that can be done with AI. So I'm certainly very cautiously optimistic about AI. I do wonder if AI in some sense is a more centralizing force versus Bitcoin being the more decentralizing force. It's to be seen if most of the value accrual will either happen at the silicon level with companies like Nvidia, or will it happen at a big tech layer with respect to, you know, aggregation of data and them having access to large data sets, or will it happen through, you know, the classic Silicon Valley tech way of like, you know, small scale innovation, startups really disrupting the next set of workflows and consumer applications. So I think it's to be seen. Certainly very, very, you know, cautiously optimistic about AI. A lot of my, you know, friends and colleagues from the recent Y Combinator batch, certainly extremely smart folks working on AI applications. I'm kind of always on the lookout. But yeah, I think the whole idea of, you know, Bitcoin kind of subsume AI innovation as well, because what Bitcoin is if there is to exist an economy outside of AI, Bitcoin touches that as well. So Bitcoin is not just touching technological innovation; it touches all of human, you know, human society. it touches every nook and corner of the global economy. And to that extent, Bitcoin is going to be certainly a massively important parallel force as the rise of AI happens over the next sort of several years and several decades. And in some extent, I feel cryptographic verification is a check on power of AI. So the whole idea of like doomerism built on AI, we for sure know that AI cannot like beat mathematics. So if we can use cryptographic and mathematical sort of ways of safeguarding human interest, that might be a very interesting way to like not have the doom case of AI really materialize. So as I said, as a technologist, I love the technology. I love folks working on it, but it's still a long way to go. Most of the innovation that we have seen on AI still happens at a more sort of software and the bits level. I would be like more fascinated when we start seeing AI really playing a role in the atomic world, in the physical world. That's where I feel I might jump ship and become an AI doomer as well.
Yeah, that will be crazy whenever that does happen. I feel like eventually it's just a matter of time. I guess, do you buy into like Jeff Booth's thesis of massive deflation? Like, I guess I kind of see AI, and I'm sure you probably agree, or you at least have additional thoughts here, that AI could potentially accelerate the ability to produce goods and services for the entire world. And when you're pricing those goods and services, maybe they will continue going up in dollar terms, but maybe in Bitcoin terms, they will go down rapidly. How do you think about that?
No, absolutely. I think, all of technology and human productivity should be a deflationary force. It's only in the fiat era that we see, price inflation of technological outcomes and technological, products and services. By definition, as humans become better with using technology, better with using energy, better with using like machines, things should get cheaper and the standard of living for the entire society should improve. So I 100% sort of agree with the broader thesis, Jeff Booth's thesis around AI being a massively deflationary force, combining that with a very interesting sort of form of money that is inherently deflationary in nature. So I think in some ways it's a double whammy of AI being a true deflationary force in terms of economy and technology and sort of Bitcoin being the deflationary unit of account. In that sense, I think 21st century is going to be a very, very interesting sort of time for all of us to be alive and participate in this hyper deflationary environment.
Yeah, I mean, things are changing faster than ever, that's for sure. On that note of like energy and maybe AI eventually connecting to like more of the physical atomic world, you have a interesting quote in your bio: energy is prosperity and vice versa. Can you explain that to people?
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, energy is the primary and the most fundamental input to human civilization. Across the long arch of human history, it's always been about like finding denser and denser sources of energy, harnessing those sources of energy, and then sort of making manifestations of it into the real world that really uplifts the standard of living. And to that extent, if you look at any kind of metric that tracks or tries to measure prosperity, let's say GDP per capita being the most common one. If you try to plot the countries across the world with GDP per capita on the x-axis and then energy per capita consumed on the y-axis, you see a very, very strong correlation. And that what effectively tells you is that standard of living or GDP per capita is nothing but more energy being produced and consumed per capita. And to that extent, I believe that like prosperity is essentially energy and energy is prosperity.
I completely agree. I also I've had thoughts on kind of Bitcoin and energy before, where it's like you see these large Bitcoin mines. Effectively, like what Bitcoin is kind of connecting the digital world to the physical world. Like there's these massive call them data centers, call them mining facilities, whatever you want to call them, consuming gigawatts of energy. And like, they're just a bunch of computers and they're just like trying to like enter the Bitcoin lottery to get fresh Bitcoin. I feel like maybe with like what's happening with AI, because you talked about like how AI may not be like really affecting the physical world quite yet, but I feel like Bitcoin, as it gets larger and bigger, is like that bridge between the physical world and like the digital world, maybe like getting bigger. And as like we produce more energy and as AI gets more advanced, maybe we're going to have to start seeing, or maybe we're going to start seeing like AI actually get into the physical world, whether it's like self-driving or self-farming or self-delivery or whatnot. I think that may be the next step. Do you like, when will AI get into the physical world, and when will we see, like really see that abundance in the physical world? Do you have any thoughts on that? Hey everyone, this week I want to talk about Stamp Seed. This is very cool metal plate where you can literally stamp your Bitcoin seed phrase with this hammer that they sell you into this metal plate. This is a must have for all Bitcoin holders. If you have taken self-custody of your Bitcoin, you want to make sure you've recorded your seed phrase on something that is fireproof, waterproof, and time resistant. This is a great product for Bitcoiners who have taken self-custody and want that extra level of security and resiliency to store their Bitcoin. So if you are interested in this product, definitely check out stampseed.com. Use code BLOCKWARE15 for 15% off the entire website.
I mean, I think my best case scenario is about 10 years. So sometime in 2030s, I think we'll start seeing AI's real impact in the physical world. I certainly doubt if it will be faster than that. I wish it were to be the case, but my sense is, and I feel one of the most bullish areas for AI from my perspective is essentially life sciences and biotech. Just being able to like simulate different kinds of like data sets and being able to like just fast track drug discovery and like finding solutions to like, you know, human diseases. That's something where I'm like most excited about AI's real world impact. So yeah, I feel that over the next 7 to 10 years, I you know, we will certainly see a rise of like, you know, impact of AI in the real world. Again, you know, sort of going back to Jeff Booth's thesis of merging that with the hyper deflationary force that is Bitcoin, I think we could be at a real turning point in some sense. It's always hard to sort of, you know, while you are in that sort of same frame of reference, it's really hard to sort of pinpoint when the turning point is happening. So obviously historians have a better view of history and are able to like say that, okay, like maybe 2014, maybe 2008, maybe 2020, like this was a turning point. But certainly it feels like we are in midst of that decade where the turning point is just right around the corner.
Yeah, I completely agree. Yeah, I think I saw on that note of like life sciences, I think I saw there was a like a recent academic paper published about like reversing aging or something like that. If I don't know if you saw that, but I feel like some crazy things could happen soon.
Absolutely. I think our ability to like sort of, you know, crunch large numbers and large, you know, run like large simulations would really allow us to like find solutions to human disease and human suffering that was previously like not thinkable. So certainly one of the most interesting areas for me within AI is if life sciences and biotech. And I say this as a person who has not had like very sort of professional background in biotech, but I just find that area to be very fascinating.
Yeah, 100%. Let's dive into like kind of a macro discussion, I guess, since you do have, you know, traditional Wall Street experience, you at least interacted with people, you know, that trade a lot of money, manage a lot of money, trade fixed income. You know, how do you think about macro and Bitcoin?
Yeah, so I think again, you know, this time is different. Is obviously a statement that, you know, traders have used again and again, and to be only proven wrong over time. But certainly, it really feels that we are in a unique moment, if not a completely different moment, in the sense that you know, debt to GDP levels across the Western world is at all time high, and you know, there's no real absent like a hyperdeflationary productivity boom because of AI, there is no real way in which we can bring down the debt to GDP ratio without really like nominally just printing money and essentially having a structural monetary inflation. Obviously, you know, there are you know, great analysts and like macro folks, you know, shout out to Lynn Alden. I really sort of like her thesis around this idea that we are much more closer to like the 1940s than 1970s, because 1970s was not really a kind of an inflationary environment that was driven because of fiscal policy. It was, you know, 1940s seems to be a much more stronger parallel in that sense, where the current inflation that we see in terms of price levels is primarily being driven because of fiscal policies, where monetary policies obviously did not really help the case, but you know, absent fiscal policies, we might not be seeing such a, you know, immense like erosion of purchasing power. And to that extent, like looking back at 1930s, 1940s gives us like better clues in terms of where we are headed. And to most of my, you know, friends at Wall Street and in sort of more traditional finance, you know, the reasoning around Bitcoin to them from my perspective is always about like an insurance policy, a kind of a black swan hedge. I have been sort of thinking around Bitcoin as a credit default swap on fiat currencies. I know that this is becoming like a popular sort of meme within Bitcoin community now. But it's, you know, Bitcoin is absolutely 100%. If nothing, it is certainly a CDS on fiat currencies. It's a last functioning alarm bell. It's a check on like central banking policy, and to that extent, you know, Bitcoin was absolutely a killer macro asset class in the previous decade. But even the decade ahead of us, you know, there's a long way for Bitcoin to go from here. Bitcoin's true competition is not really cryptographic, you know, cryptocurrencies or you know, the things that most of popular media associates it with. Bitcoin's true competition is first gold, next US dollar, and then eventually real estate as a pure storehold of wealth. And to that extent, you know, we could be seeing Bitcoin sort of go anywhere from like 30 to 100x over the next several years. So always kind of like, you know, I'm not comfortable like giving price targets, but I feel, you know, Bitcoin is certainly going to be one of the most interesting asset class, even for a traditional finance investor, someone who does not really sort of, let's say, believe in the macro idea or the large idea of a Bitcoin standard or the perfect money. I think any investor, any balance sheet should be holding some amount of Bitcoin, just to sort of, you know, just as a black swan hedge.
Definitely. Yeah, I mean, I think normal people, Wall Street people, everyone knows that the dollar is designed to debase, right? Like, there's more and more debt in the world. We're never really going to be able to ever pay off the debt. And so, like, and if you ever, like, you know, stop creating more debt, then it starts to become like this nasty deflationary spiral. More debt feeds on more debt and defaults feed on more defaults. So we know that, like, we have to keep, you know, inflating the debt away pretty much forever. And it's like, okay, and everyone kind of knows that, right? Like normal people, they have their 401k where they hold real estate, stocks, bonds. You know, even Wall Street obviously knows you can't just like sit on T-bills and do nothing forever. You got to invest to grow your purchasing power over time. And it's like, okay, everyone knows that. The next step is just saying like, actually Bitcoin is one of the best things that you can hold because of its unique monetary properties. So I feel like everyone, the world is like really close. And there probably, you know, arguably there have been tipping points, whether it was like 2013, 2017, 2020, 2021. But I feel like we're probably on the cusp of, you know, yet another tipping point, whether it's 2024 or 2025.
Absolutely. I think, you know, but before the end of this decade, we will see a major central bank, a G7 central bank holding Bitcoin as a strategic reserve asset on their balance sheet, if not earlier, right? So. I had a bet going on with a friend where I sort of, you know, put a bet that in the 2028 US election cycle, we will see one of the candidates taking a pro-Bitcoin position. It seems that I would be wrong on that bet because 2024 might be the election where, you know, one of the major party, you know, candidates could be taking, at least the Overton window around Bitcoin and you know, national debt and debt to GDP is certainly shifting. And it's certainly shifting in the right direction. So I think, yeah, certainly never been a more bullish time for Bitcoin. So
yeah, 100%. Yeah, it's pretty funny about the, you know, presidential candidates embracing Bitcoin. I mean, to me, it makes so much sense. Like, I think whether you're an executive at a large corporation or a politician, and you're just kind of like trying to do what's right, like for a large group of people, it's like no one really like hates you if you take on a small allocation of Bitcoin, but like there's a small group of a massively growing small group of people that will like love you forever if you like take a small Bitcoin position. So it's like it's kind of a win-win scenario to do it, in my opinion.
Absolutely. You know, Bitcoiners are the most powerful intolerant minority that is truly global in nature. And that's really, you know, I think the enough spotlight is not being sort of thought in terms of like it being a truly global asset class. We see Bitcoin being adopted as a form of currency, as a medium of exchange in the global south, where there is sort of, you know, political instability, monetary instability. And then in the global north, we see Bitcoin being adopted as a storehold of value, as a form of digital gold. And I think both these uses are extremely interesting and kind of like complement each other. And that tells you to the immaculate conception behind Bitcoin, where it really sort of, you know, truly fulfills all the three major roles of a perfect money.
Yeah, I think like Peter Dunworth calls it like the triple point asset. Nothing quite like this. What are your thoughts on BlackRock, right? Like they've been making the news over the last 30 days or so, you know, introducing a Bitcoin ETF, then having it pushed back, but then refiling, which seemed actually pretty positive. What do you think about BlackRock introducing basically, or trying to introduce a Bitcoin ETF, you know, kind of near the bottom?
I think it's interesting in the sense that Bitcoiners never really care about like validation from Wall Street or traditional institutions, but you know, in popular imagination, this seems like a point where, you know, really like BlackRock can really push you know, needle, and like really, you know, Wall Street looks at BlackRock as obviously one of the biggest institutions. A lot of like global capital is being, you know, sort of directed and funneled via BlackRock. BlackRock is the largest asset manager in the world with like more than $9 trillion in assets. So I think broadly speaking, I am sort of positive about this development. It's not perfect, it's not self-custodied Bitcoin, but it's definitely a way for which through which, like, you know, large institutions, family offices, wealthy investors, maybe sovereign funds, wide set of institutions, wide set of financial intermediaries can now really have access to Bitcoin in a regulated fashion through a name that is, you know, popular, that is kind of like, you know, has a history of, you know, delivering, you know, high grade, like at least financial products, if not returns to their investors. So I you know, broadly speaking, I'm positive about the development. We will see how it evolves. I think there is just a lot of like regulatory uncertainty around, you know, custody rules and how will, you know, BlackRock interact with different intermediaries. So it's to be seen. It's interesting that it is happening just a year before, you know, halving, as well as the year before a major, you know, presidential election. So the timing couldn't have been better in some sense.
Yeah, definitely. I agree. It's going to be awesome to see like if it actually goes live, when it goes live, and like how much, you know, AUM they can capture in a short period of time. I think it could be,
yeah,
it could be huge.
So I think the way to think about, you know, Bitcoin is that there is no one straight path or straight line to a Bitcoin standard. I think the world will like experiment through like various different models. You know, it's very easy to like dismiss anything that is not Bitcoin, but I feel, you know, I eventually believe that Bitcoin standard will emerge, maybe sometime in the second half of this century, maybe the third quarter of the century is my sort of, you know, timing prediction in terms of when the Bitcoin standard truly emerges. Over the next 25 years, however, I really see, you know, different countries and different like economic blocks trying out their own versions of hard currencies and hard monies. Gold will certainly, you know, continue to be an important sort of, you know, non-sovereign hedge that institutions and central banks hold. So I think we should be more careful in terms of dismissing some of these alternatives that, you know, different countries and different economic blocks might undertake. Having said that, Bitcoin is certainly only going to get stronger with time and only capture more of imagination of policymakers and you know society across the globe. So yeah, there's no one single path through which a Bitcoin standard will emerge. You know, companies like BlackRock will need to participate one way or another to really educate the world about Bitcoin. So I'm broadly positive. It's to be seen how SEC and the various government agencies react to this being deployed.
Yeah, I agree. I think like the path to a Bitcoin standard like is going to be volatile, right? It's exactly what we've seen since the inception of Bitcoin.
Yeah.
I definitely don't think that will change.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Yeah. So I guess off of that, off of BlackRock, you know, basically trying to capture a significant amount of Bitcoin and kind of extract some sort of, you know, return from holding people's Bitcoin, like how do you think about the importance of self-custody? So like, obviously it's very different from holding your own private keys. What do you think there?
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, if you think about it, there have not been like major, you know, assets across human history that were like easy to custody yourself, right? I mean, you could argue that a person like can self-custody small gold coins, but certainly like not. It's not a scalable way of like you know storing wealth. Bitcoin is the first bearer asset that you can you know it is which is like sort of scale invariant in terms of storage costs. So you know if even if you're holding 0.1 BTC or if you're holding 100 BTC, the best and the right way to like you know hold that is through self-custody. And even within self-custody, you know, one could argue that multisig is the gold standard of like doing self-custody. So you want to have more protection, more resilience to your self-custody stack. I think it's, you know, Bitcoin, the only real, I mean, Bitcoiners who have been around know this very well. But I think it's you know, every person needs to go through their own sort of cycle and life cycle of education. I wish I was able to like, you know, onboard every single, you know, no coiner or a pre-coiner onto a self-custodial Bitcoin standard. But I think that is a fantasy. I think there will always continue to exist, you know, custodial products, exchanges, you know, ETF-like products. Fortunately or unfortunately, before we sort of truly move everyone on the self-custodial standard, Thea, for its, you know, we want to play our role. We want to make self-custody accessible for everyone. We want to make multisig accessible and affordable for everyone. That's our long-term vision. We truly believe in the cliched idea of Bitcoin being borderless, which means that you know we believe that self-custody and multisig are like sort of global challenges, and you know there needs to exist technology companies and technology platforms that make you know self-custody simple, self-custody easy, self-custody secure, and in the right way. We have seen you know, the consumer trust in Bitcoin and broadly speaking, you know, crypto sort of kind of crash in this sort of, you know, 2022 cycle. It is only upon ourselves, you know, folks who understand this technology and the power of self-custody well to like design a company, design an experience that can like take everyone along on a self-custodial standard.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was Matt Odell who says like the process to hyper Bitcoinization is just people that refuse to take self-custody, them getting rugged over and over and over again. And it seems
love
like,
that
like,
quote.
Yeah, yeah. It seems like that's exactly what happens. And it's like some people, you know, tell me like, hey, like people are never gonna learn to take self-custody. And I'm like, well, like, I mean, yeah, I agree. Like some people have a hard time learning that, or, you know, maybe the tools that they have at their disposal are not very clear and easy to use, at least in the past. Maybe like it was hard to do it, but if they don't do it, they'll get rugged. So like, it's better off just kind of like holding no Bitcoin to begin with. So I think people like eventually figure out like, hey, I do need to take self-custody, which is interesting. If you don't take self-custody, you end up with no Bitcoin anyways. So
absolutely. And the idea is to like make, you know, self-custody simpler and less overwhelming. You know, it is almost like, again, you know, dishonest to like expect a generation of people who have been used to extremely like high quality mobile apps, be it for their, you know, logistical needs, travel needs, financial needs, you know, expecting them to like revert back to a pen and paper or a steel plate is just unreasonable. I understand the value prop of like, doing all of those mechanisms, but to expect that the large majority of the world will move onto a pen and paper standard for like storing their wealth is just almost ridiculous. And to that extent, how do we make self-custody simple? How do we make it less overwhelming? At the same time, not really compromising on security, right? Where we understand security is the most non-negotiable aspect of Bitcoin, but that doesn't mean that someone cannot really work on an improved user experience, improved customer experience. And that's where, our backgrounds with respect to building consumer technology apps at companies like, Google and Robinhood, and also for like a variety of other smaller startups, comes into play. So we are Bitcoiners who are building a self-custodial platform for the wider world and making it accessible and easy for them to do multi-sig, for the generational wealth.
Yeah, I mean, that's awesome. Like, one, I'm a huge fan of what you guys are building. I think it's great for Bitcoin. It's great for the world. It's great for new people adopting Bitcoin. Can you maybe like tell us a little more about like the vision you have for the product?
Absolutely. So, essentially, Theia, think of Theia as your base layer of Bitcoin banking. For any kind of like Bitcoin banking needs, you can think of, and I'm sort of trying to like talk in a sense where folks who are not necessarily Bitcoin maximalists or Bitcoiners today can also kind of sympathize. Where think of self-custodial Bitcoin as your savings layer for long-term wealth, and then all sorts of other kind of Bitcoin services will be built as layers on top of the savings layer, right? So multi-sig self-custody is your long-term storage, is your long-term way of like holding on to your generational wealth. It's a way to like have programmatic shared custody with your partner, with your kids, with your family. So Theia's long-term vision is to basically become the consumer-grade Bitcoin bank, so a Bitcoin-centric like private bank of sorts in the long run. And the way to that vision is essentially like by delivering a very high-grade, secure, simple multi-sig self-custodial experience, without really necessarily, going into the details of explaining people how multi-sig operates. I think, again, as Bitcoiners, we are fascinated by the technology itself, but for the vast majority of society, they are not going to be spending a whole lot of time trying to understand how multi-sig operates. So how do we deliver them the right amount of security and the right amount of simplicity, without really like sort of, taking away the key property of Bitcoin, which is no counterparty risk. So what Theia's vision is that we want to like eliminate all forms of counterparty risk from your long-term Bitcoin storage, and at the same time also introduce simplicity and convenience to your long-term Bitcoin storage needs. So that's the vision we are building towards.
Yeah, I mean, I love it. Huge supporter, obviously. I do have another question for you, but where can people go learn more about Theia if they're interested in the product?
So we are an early stage company. We just recently, launched our website. It goes at thea.us. Please go check it out. Sign up for the wait list. We are currently in private beta. We recently launched our latest version on Apple Test Flight, and we continue to like update our waitlist folks with new version, and we hope to launch on Apple App Store in the coming weeks. So stay tuned.
Awesome. What's the meaning behind the word Theia, by the way?
Oh, so Theia is essentially the Greek root word essentially means a goddess of vision and sight. And for us, Bitcoin is essentially long-term vision, long-term prosperity, and that really sort of inspired us to keep the name Theia.
Nice. I like that. It's very cool. Last question, then we can wrap it up. I'm curious to get your thoughts on this. Like, I used to work at Mimesis Capital, where we invested in like a bunch of early stage Bitcoin projects. I know like a lot of like TVP great guys over there, like a lot of Bitcoin focused VC firms, and it's like a segment of Bitcoin that's super interesting to me. I guess, why build a Bitcoin startup right now? What are your thoughts here? Why'd you do this?
I think again, we're technically part of the bear market territory right now. I mean, it's funny that Bitcoin has gone up 80%, close to 85% this year, and it's still considered a bear market territory. Having said that, I think post pandemic, we have really sort of we are now definitely past event horizon in terms of Bitcoin being a strategic asset class for the next sort of multiple decades to come. And the first generation of companies and first generation of products were really built by Bitcoiners for Bitcoiners. We see that now there is an opportunity to really build Bitcoin products for non-Bitcoiners, for pre-coiners, for no-coiners. And to that extent, we finally see the crypto mania kind of like fizzling out. And the large majority of VCs, by the way, if you think about like venture capital industry, a large majority of them did not really participate in the crypto mania, right? So more than 90% of the VC capital was actually sitting on the sidelines when the crypto mania was happening. So I feel over the next several years, as more VCs and more sort of technology entrepreneurs get excited about Bitcoin, as they learn about Bitcoin, I'm hopeful that they will start participating in the ecosystem. They'll start supporting the ecosystem. And to that extent, we certainly want to be one of those companies, one of those channels through which we can like bridge that gap. Silicon Valley was, for the most part, like very bullish on Bitcoin in the first half of 2010s, right after Bitcoin was kind of launched. But after the ICO sort of boom and the rise of DeFi and the rise of like excess liquidity created by the Fed, we saw them like kind of like pivot into like the broader crypto space. We certainly see that reversing trend. Our current investors happen to be all traditional sort of big name VCs that you would find on any other Silicon Valley startup. And to that extent, as I said, we want to be one of those channels through which we actually gain attention of large pools of capital sitting in Silicon Valley and get diverted into Bitcoin.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, it's really cool to see like a Bitcoin focused startup going through YC and having like the background that you guys have, because it's kind of, it's not normal in the Bitcoin world. But I think it definitely will become one as Bitcoin goes through another cycle and doesn't die again, and everyone is forced to reevaluate what it really is for themselves. So, Smeet, this was awesome. Really enjoyed this conversation.
Thanks, Joe. Thanks for having me.